staff and volunteers.
Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, we were supposed to have the three candidates for the Missouri 23rd District Missouri State Representative seat in studio, and they are Democrat Barbara Washington, also the incumbent, Republican David Martin, and the independent Jeff Francis. And the only one that's in studio this morning is the incumbent, Ms. Barbara Washington. Good morning, Barbara. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning, Joseph. Thank you for having me, and thank you for inviting all of us.
So, you are running for re-election. So, tell us a little bit about that.
It's kind of surreal because I haven't been in office very long. It's almost as soon, you know, soon as the session's over, then I had to jump into election mode while also being in serving the community mode. When you're in Jeff City, you're serving the community by filing the best legislation you think helps your district as well as the state of Missouri, as well as fighting against all of the many bad laws that were filed this year that hurt your district as well as the state of Missouri. So you're not, or you shouldn't be, in a re-election mode. As soon as you come home, you got to jump into that every other year. For me, the same year that I took office. But also be about the business of trying to serve the community through programming, attending, creating my own programs, developing programs, and being at other programs, talking to neighbors, talking to residents to see what they really want us to continue to do to better the 23rd District.
So let's take a step back. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your background, and what you do other when you're not serving in Jeff City? And we'll start right there.
My background: born and raised Kansas City, Missouri, fighting right now to save my elementary school, Greenwood Elementary School, right there at the corner of 27th and Cleveland. Grew up on 27th and Cleveland. Parents been there for 65 years, I think. Went to Southwest High School, went to Lincoln, I think back then it was called Lincoln Academy, for accelerated study for junior high school. Continued public education at the University of Missouri Columbia, the number one journalism school in the world. And went to law school here at UMKC. I've always been a Kansas City resident. I did intern in New York for a year. And let's see, lived in Grandview for about a year with my daughter. But pretty much a 27th and Cleveland girl, second ward girl, still living the same. I live a mile away from the home I grew up in, and my first home was also a mile away from the home I grew up in. So I like my district, I like my people, and I like my community.
Sounds like there's some Mizzou bias there with that background. So
it's not bias. This is we're in Missouri, so we should be cheering for Mizzou, even though my school does need to do a better job of graduating African-American students.
Okay, and also maybe a little bit better job on the court, too. So they improved last year. Let's hope we see some more improvement this year. So before you were a state representative, had you ever been an elected official before?
Yes. In 2016, I was elected to the Metropolitan Community College School Board of Trustees. A lot of our people in our community just call it Penn Valley, but it is a five-campus system. It consists of Penn Valley, Blue River, Penn Valley at the Broadway location, Blue River in Independence, Maple Woods, which is north of the river, Longview, which is South Kansas City / Grandview / Lee Summit area, and we have the Business and Technology Center, which is at 435 and Front Street. Before that, I was just involved in a few campaigns and always interested in helping out those who I believed in who were running for office.
So tell the listeners, why are you running again for to be a state representative for the 23rd District?
Well, 5 months is clearly not enough to do the work to bring funding, economic development, better health care, better jobs, better workforce training to my community. So I'm running to continue to do the job that I promised my constituents I would do when they voted for me last year.
Okay. Can you tell us about any neighborhood projects or other community organizations that you may be involved with within the 23rd District?
Alpha Kappa Alpha is everywhere, so I'm a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, but also I'm a member of Freedom Incorporated, the Urban Summit. I'm on the board of the United Nations Local Association. I'm on the board of the Kansas City Boys Choir and Girls Choir. I'm also involved in the League of Women Voters, NAACP. I'm losing my mind.
Okay, so what projects that you are, what projects have you actually, other than organizations, what projects are you doing within the community?
In July, we had a mental health awareness event. I partnered with Alpha Kappa Alpha on that, as well as Home State Health out of St. Louis. We will forever be grateful for them for that support. That project was to increase the awareness of mental health in the minority community. As black folks, we go to God. We don't go to the psychiatrist. However, we suffer more than any other racial ethnic group with bouts of depression, bipolar, and other mental health disorders. So I brought, I'd been doing it already with the sorority, but as a state rep, I was able to expand that, the reach. And we brought in a young man who many Kansas Cityans knew as a great running back by the name of Larry Johnson, who speaks, promotes mental health awareness in Florida, where he now lives, to bring to life so you can see what failing to get your problems addressed really does to a person. And he shared with us how not addressing his issues led to him being someone who committed domestic violence, someone who injured himself, and almost led to him not being here with us anymore. So if we fight mental health awareness, it also helps us with our crimes as well, because a lot of people who are suffering from mental health disorders are turning to drugs and crime to survive. And so that's a big thing that I want to continue to make bigger. In March, we had a crime awareness event for the community. Just a couple of weeks ago, we had a felon voter registration event. In June, I can't remember what panel we had in June.
Seems like you've been, let's just say this, you've been a busy beaver. One of the things, and I know it served to get his, it shortened his career, especially here in Kansas City, because the undiagnosed part, he didn't know that he was going through all those things, that he actually needed treatment. Had he gotten treatment, he may be still playing in the NFL today, but it was that refusal not to get treatment that kind of really shortened his career.
Well, actually, he did have some treatment at the time. The Chiefs and most teams have on staff psychiatrists. They had Dr. Susan Wilson, an African American woman who was an amazing therapist. She's now vice chancellor at the UMKC system. But he didn't take it seriously like he should have, and he didn't seek treatment outside of Dr. Wilson, and he allowed his mental illness to turn into anger, which turned into being detrimental to himself, to those he played with, and those whom he lived around.
Correct. We've had a late arrival. Independent candidate Jeff Francis has joined us. Good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning. Welcome, Mr. Jackson, and welcome to all our listeners and Mrs. Washington.
So, briefly, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? Within a minute.
Yes. Well, I am a native of Kansas City. I was released on a wrongful conviction over 10 years in 2007. I was released from wrongful conviction after serving over 10 years. And ever since I've been in the community, I've hit the ground running. I've been doing a lot of mentoring. I've been doing a lot of transitioning as far as my friends, my peer group, being an example for them, showing them some of the different choices and opportunities that is available for us outside of the lifestyle that we grew up in. And so that's what I serve as. I serve as an example, and sometimes I see myself as a sacrificial lamb.
So have you ever been a state representative or elected official before?
No, I have never. Well, in different organizations, I've gone through election processes with the NAACP, with the GRT, and other nonprofit organizations, in different processes where, you know, the people have to be the voice and choose what it is that they want or who they want to represent them. And I did. I haven't actually served in that official capacity, but I did run in the last year's special election, and I ran as a write-in candidate.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit, in about a minute, why are you running to be state representative for the 23rd district?
Most of all, it's the voter apathy. It's the confidence that the lack of confidence that the people have in the system, and the lack of trust that the system has for the people. And so I want to bridge that gap. Also, I want to show my peer group where I come from. Like I say, there's other options and other opportunities for us. So when I step out and I take these different opportunities as far as exercising my civic duty and my civic responsibility, I find that there are so many things that simply get missed. And as I've been exploring and canvassing the streets, the voter apathy is terrible. And it's kind of like hard to even communicate with a common resident or a citizen once you let them know that you are a political candidate or you are a candidate for office. And so because of the outlook that they have towards candidates.
Okay, I want to kind of dig into that just for a second. So why do you feel that it is difficult to connect? I'm a former elected official. I served on the school board for 4 years. Why do you feel it's difficult to connect with the constituents and the people that you're looking to represent?
It's because of the accessibility, the availability, the approachability, you know, being approachable, and actually following up on a lot of the concerns that you address as far as in your campaign or your platform when you were running. Sometimes and it's not always the candidate's fault. Sometimes the candidate may not be aware of the political processes once they get involved in, or once they get seated in a particular seat.
Okay, so we've kind of caught up, and this question is going to be for both of you, but I'm going to start with Mr. Francis first. So as a state representative, a large portion of your job is meeting with people, meeting with different organizations, and connecting the representatives, the people that you represent that may need resources or other things. So how would you first connect with those people that are contacting you and serve them?
I believe that's a natural knack or a natural talent of mine that I've developed over the years. Coming from my history of being a performing and recording artist, I was always promoting events and stuff like that. So I would always have to connect and engage and actually interact with people and feel them and bounce things off of them.
Okay. Miss Washington, how would you connect and meet with the people that you are serving and connect them with resources they may contact your office needing?
I would keep doing some of what I'm doing and just try to do more. Like I said, by creating community programs, in addition to the mental health event, every January. I wasn't able to do it this year because it was just so overwhelming a whirlwind to, get down to Jeff City by the 10th, and we did not have Martin Luther King's birthday off. But for the last 3 years, I've had a canned food drive. I've asked the Juke House to be open on that Monday. It's not a day that they're normally open. And I collect that food and money and give that to the No Joy Foundation. I've done that every year. And by making sure that the community knows what's going on, it brings light to the issue of hunger in our community. I do a small business entrepreneurial program every fall for women, where we invite specialists, experts on how to create a business, how to sustain a business, how to finance a business, and when to get out of a business. And that's a free program that we offer to anyone in the community. We do highlight women, one, because I am a woman, and because women are the fastest growing number of entrepreneurs in the country right now. And it's a free program. We've had the regional director of the SBA there. We've had lawyers, accountants, small business people, people that started a small business and are now mid-sized businesses, people that are now WBEs, MBEs. We do that. This fall, we'll also partner with American Heart Association to do an old-fashioned homecoming dance for those that are seniors, because heart disease is the number one killer of women, so that we can continue to address that. But I also make go to neighborhood association meetings. I contact the neighborhoods. I try to fight. Right now I'm in a big fight with your former people, the school district, to save my elementary school. And then I mentor. I mentor grown-ups and children.
Okay. As you talk about the health aspects, and I was going to bring this up later, but I want to bring it up now. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so if you are a woman or a man, men can have breast cancer too, get yourself checked, not only just for yourself, but for the loved ones and that you have with you. And there have been so many advances in cancer technology that the majority of these cancers, if caught early, are very treatable, and you have great odds of survival. So October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, definitely check yourself out, not only for yourself, but for your loved ones, your children, your other family members, and those that depend upon you. So we've answered that question. So now, Ms. Washington, in your opinion, what improvements need to be made to improve the 23rd Legislative District and the quality of life of those who reside in the district?
We need better economic development. We need jobs. We need more education. We need to educate the people so that I applaud Mr. Francis for saying he changed his circle of friends after he was released, where he doesn't sound like he should have ever been incarcerated. But for me, also having a juvenile offense and living in that type of environment, education helped me. So even if you don't go off to a four-year school, we need more education, because more education does lead to jobs. So we can even bring technology programs like commonly called the Voltech back to a Kansas City school district. They have some Voltech, but they need more. In fact, I'm right now trying to partner with them, with the Metropolitan Community Colleges, to increase that. We just started a construction institute at North Kansas City in the North Kansas City High Schools. We need to do that in the 23rd District. We need people to see that you don't have to leave our community to make it better. You need to stay in our community and invest in our community. So when we do have the resources and the education, we need to live by the adage, to whom much is given, much is required, and require those in our community to give back and to invest in our community, whether that's through new businesses, whether that's through education, that's through mentoring, or anything that betters our community.
Okay. And Mr. Francis, same question. In your opinion, what improvements need to be made to improve the 23rd Legislative District and the quality of life for those that reside in the district?
I believe it should be the culture of the relationship with our leadership and the people, the residents. That's a key component. We understand that we need economic development. We understand we need education. We need programs. But when we have all of this available, how does these resources actually reach the street? And I would like to make a correction about Ms. Washington. She said, I changed my friends. I did not change my friends, but I do agree with the fact that the people that come from our communities, they need to stay in the communities, or they need to come back and build the communities. I did not change my friends. I stayed with my friends, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I want to be that example, and I want to show my friends, and I want to show them that just because I may have transitioned my life, you guys are still my friends, and these are possibilities for you as well, because I'm going to be here to help you. Because you were there to help me, and when we were in the trenches together, sometimes, like they say, we may not be bad people, we may make poor choices. And I believe that's one of the critical things, is that making sure that these resources touch the ground.
Well, you said you changed the people that you hung around. If you, when you made an earlier statement, unless I misunderstood you.
Well, I change who I hang around, but they're still my friends. I don't say, hey, you're not my friend no more. Or what? I guess I can expand on that and say I expanded my friends, my friends to where the circles that I travel and that I frequent.
Okay. So the last question went to Miss Washington first. The next question goes to you. What are your priorities that you would like to accomplish in your first year should you win the election? Mr. Francis?
My priorities, one of the key priorities first is with my seniors and dealing with this issue that concerns their utilities as well and some of their health care issues. The local artists and the youth in our community. There's so much disenfranchisement with our local talents and with our local artists. They have STEM programs and then they have STEAM programs. Science, technology, engineering, and math. Science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. That is part of our culture. And I believe that that's been one of the things that since they have taken that away and then they downplay it, everybody say, hey, well, we don't need a lot of musicians. We need more tradesmen. I understand we need tradesmen. But when you tell a person that because they aspire to be an artist or a talented musician or one of the other crafts, that they're not as valuable or viable in the community or they don't serve the community to a capacity as the other ones, then that's telling this person, hey, what you're doing or what you aspire to do, it's not good enough, and you are not good enough.
Miss Washington, can I have a second if you don't mind before you speak, if you don't mind? Can I speak? Let me speak before I ask you the same question. I'd like to make from serving on the school board, what I saw of our children and our youth are, one, a lot of them need good mentors. They need people that can tell them different things that they've went through, but also show them that they've went through it and they can go through it. Secondly, there's a lot of trauma in our youth because the gunshots, the violence, the impact, and a lot of the kids may walk to school. And what we found was that students would come to school by the time they got there at 8:30, it would take them maybe about another hour just to decompress, de-stress. By 1 o'clock, they're thinking about how they're going to have to go back home and all the different things in which they were going through. So our youth right now need mentors. And I signed up to be a mentor to the Kansas City Public School District, and we definitely need people who are mentors of color, but we need men mentors as well as women mentors. So if you are interested, please contact your local school district. It doesn't have to be Kansas City. It can be Raytown, Grandview, Lee Summit, but our children need your help.
So I'm also a Kansas City Public School mentor as well.
And so now, Ms. Washington, so you've been in office for 5 months, but what are some of the priorities you would like to see accomplished in your next term should you win re-election?
I want to kind of clear up. I've been in office since January, so I've been in office for 10 months.
Okay.
We held session for 5 months. We work all year round. In fact, I'm working now and was working last night. What I'd like to see, the number one thing that I accomplished this year was to change the age of charging a juvenile as an adult from 17 to 18. It's a proud moment for me because I was a juvenile offender. And if I could even get the laws back to what they were when I was a juvenile offender, that would be better for our youth. 17-year-old men should not be in prison with grown men. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. We need to continue to fight for that because we need our boys and our girls here on the street and here in the city so we can educate them so that they don't end up being like Mr. Francis and wrongfully convicted and spend a large portion of their young adulthood in a facility that can be detrimental to them. We need to improve our health care. We need to increase Medicaid funding. Missouri is one of the states that could have more money for Medicaid if we would do Medicaid expansion. So we definitely need to do that. We need to increase economic development through bringing some of that tax increment finance money over to 64128. And we need to do it beyond 18th and Vine. I am a big, big proponent of 18th and Vine. Whatever credits, whatever tax incentives we need there, I definitely believe in that. However, that's not all of Kansas City, and that's not all of my district. So we need to continue to move east to clean up the blight that we have in our community, offer some tax incentives to those who are living in refurbished areas or areas that people from outside our community have come to. If they're getting tax abatements, which is fine because that's developing our community, but we need to make sure that those that are there and have owned homes, like my parents for 60 years, don't lose their home for increased taxes. So we need to work on fixing that. The number one thing in 23rd District that we need to do is we got to reduce crime. Once we get the crime reduced, then we can encourage more people to come there. Once we have more people coming there, we can improve the education. And we have to fully fund the K-12 formula. My opponents on the other side believe that they have fully funded it. However, it is not the formula that we've always had. So we need to fully fund that so that our kids can get the best education that they can get.
You struck a nerve with me there. What a lot of people may not know is the state of Missouri funds education in this way. I was the board treasurer for the school district from 2012 to 2014. And what people would ask is, where's the lottery money going? The lottery money is split into all 525 school districts in the state of Missouri. And each district gets a proportionate share based on the number of students that they have enrolled. And then you see the sign Support A Plus, which is a great program. But one of the things that really gets me is they add that money to the Missouri school budgets. Then they subtract an equal amount of money from the school district budget. So they're not truly funding education. That money is then put back into the general revenue fund for them to be able to use for other things when it really needs to be used in our schools and in our schools. So if you want to change that, advocacy and making your voice heard is the one way in which to do that. So, Ms. Washington, next question goes back to you. How do you propose to work with other elected officials that you may not agree with, Democrat or Republican, to get legislation passed, not only for your district, but to improve the conditions across Missouri?
I'm a lawyer by trade. I understand the statutes that are created because I've been working from them since I graduated from law school and passed the bar 20 years ago. I'm smart. I'm not saying that to be cocky. I'm saying that because I'm a thinker, and before I speak, I will investigate and I research. So I did that this year. The bill that passed to increase the age to prosecute young people from 17 to 18 was actually filed by myself. A similar bill was filed by a Republican representative, and the eventual bill that was passed was a Republican senator. We all are Missouri, and we just have to be able to communicate to the other side and ourselves, even within our own party if we don't agree. We have to be able to find a happy medium for what's best for the citizens of Missouri. This summer, I went to what's called Delta Days in the Boot Hill of Missouri. Those issues don't concern the 23rd District directly. Many of us don't even know that Missouri grows cotton, that Missouri grows rice, that we're one of the top states in the world that grows and exports soybeans. So the tariffs are killing our farmers. But when the tariffs are killing our farmers, our community needs to know that. So you reach aside, and I went there primarily to show my Republican opponent, my Republican House, that I care about all the issues, just and so they should care about ours as well.
Okay. Mr. Francis, how would you propose to work with other elected officials that you may not agree with, Democrat or Republican, to get legislation passed not only for our district but to improve conditions across Missouri?
Well, one of the key things to that is basically what's at stake. When somebody see that it's something that's in, there's an advantage point for them, then if you can help them to see where they benefit, and if you can help them to see where certain things hurt them, I believe that that's a very important strategy, and that's one that I like to implore. Over the years leading up to my run for campaign for candidacy. I've been doing a whole lot of traveling, not just in Missouri, but around the country. I promote music. I do albums. So what I find, just by me promoting, I'm actually in the communities, and I'm fielding questions, I'm fielding issues, and I'm actually dealing with what people are saying is a problem. And so I take that right up to the top.
Okay. You're listening to Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station. This is Joseph Jackson, your host. And today we're having candidates for the 23rd Missouri State Representative seat, and we're having an on-air forum. So if you have questions, give us a call after our break. At Studio 9 is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. We'll be right back after this short station break. And we're back. This is Joseph Jackson, host of Cowtown Conversations. And today our guests in studio are the Democrat, Barbara Washington, and the Independent, Jeff Francis, candidates for the Missouri 23rd State Representative seat. So as we left off, Ms. Washington had the last question. So, Mr. Francis, this question goes to you. What is the mistake that you've made, and how did you learn from it?
In what regards?
Any mistake that you may have made in your life, and how did you learn from that mistake?
A lot of mistakes I've made. I think one of my key mistakes, procrastination. Sometimes I sit back and I be given to contemplation, and the window of opportunity, it'll close. Some of the other mistakes that I may have made along the way, sometimes other than being a procrastinator, sometimes I've been hasty. I've been hasty in judgment. So I've learned, I've grown from to reserve my judgment. And another thing I've learned to, like Mrs. Washington say, think before I speak. And not only that, it's very important to know what you're talking about and to be honest about what you're talking about. So even if you're in error, if you're honest, you know, that doesn't save you from the error, but it still preserves your integrity.
Okay. Ms. Washington, what is the mistake you've made, and how did you learn from it?
Two. As a juvenile offender, that issue and what led me to the juvenile system was a mistake. I learned from it because it showed me that we're not all the same. Although I live on 27th in Cleveland, I understood then that not everyone had the same kind of parenting I had. Not everyone had a mother that believed in whooping you probably more than she should have, but who believed discipline was the way to keep you off the street. I'm the youngest of five, and I have three brothers who grew up during the riot era, and I think that scared my mother as a single parent. It also made me look at the person for everything in my life, and to see the glass as half full, just as other people see it as half empty, and try to evaluate each person based on that person and their individual circumstances. Two, my biggest mistake is not knowing how to say no. You need to not be afraid to do that. And as a politician, and a community person, you don't want to say no. You want to tell everybody yes, but you have to be able to be strong enough to take some time for yourself, and I've yet to learn to do that properly.
Okay. So last question went to Mr. Francis. Next one goes to you. Many longtime residents and senior citizens are worried that they will be displaced by new development and rising property values. What do you believe should be done to ensure residents are not displaced by new development and neighborhood gentrification? Ms. Washington.
One, hold on to your property. You don't have to sell it. Two, I was chastised recently for using the word gentrification, but that's exactly what it is. In order to protect our seniors and those who are homeowners, we have to be able to provide them help. And they have to know where the help comes from. If they're lower income seniors, a lot of them know about programs like Christmas in October and the paint program from the city and that sort of thing. But as a state representative, I worked this year on some bills that didn't make it to the floor, but we need to try to freeze their taxes. And that's not really a state rep issue, but we can file a bill and work with the county appraiser so that if you are living down the street from a $650,000 home and before that home came on your block, your home was worth $40,000. We need to keep your taxes at $40,000. I met a senior woman about a year and a half ago who lived on the west side. I'm sorry, now it's called Crossroads. But she had gone from paying $250 to $300 a year for her taxes. But because they're million-dollar homes, three $1 million homes within walking distance from her home, her taxes went up to almost $3,000 a year. And the taxes alone were costing her to have to borrow and depend on others to keep her home that she had owned for over 40 years. So we have to teach those who are coming to our community that gentrification should be a blend. It should be blending the old with the new and keeping in mind that we already have a culture in the 23rd District. We have history here and we have people who have dedicated their lives, and we should do nothing to destroy that.
Mr. Francis, many long-term residents and senior citizens worried they will be displaced by new development and rising property values. What do you believe should be done to ensure residents are not displaced by new development neighborhood gentrification?
One of the things I was writing an article this morning for the paper, and it's SOS. It's called Save Our Seniors. And one thing I'm proposing is for us to, all the youth, the able bodies, to adopt a senior. That's where the conversation starts. We have a lot of people who's picking up trades as far as rehabbing houses and things like that. But as far as them being removed and being displaced, there's so many different strategies and tactics that are being used to remove our seniors. But one of the things, our seniors don't necessarily have a voice. And I noticed that, you know, as I'm a caretaker for seniors, and I do frequent the senior buildings, and the utilities is an issue, and there has to be, like they say, grandfathered in. There has to be some type of clause to where they have baseline utilities and baseline mortgages or rental fees. Like as Mrs. Washington said, when these property values go up, there's been a whole lot of development taking place in our community, but there's been a lot more construction, and there's high end apartments and lofts being erected in our communities, and people can't afford them.
Okay. We've got a caller on line one. Caller, can you tell us your name and what part of Kansas City you're calling from and what your question is?
Yeah, my name's Tom, and currently I'm in the Brookside neighborhood. I'm driving. Maybe I had to pull over. I first of all, I want to thank Mr. Francis and Ms. Washington for offering their public service. I think that's really a noble thing and very hard. But my question is, as representatives of the 23rd District, you know, you're going to be in the state house with people who are from rural areas. And I was wondering what their strategy is for communicating the difference between, you know, being a person in the 23rd District and in the rural area. You know, how do you understand one another? And I'll go ahead and hang up and listen to your answer on the radio.
Thank you. So Tom's question was, as a state representative, you are going to be working with people in rural part of Missouri who have they're different from those in Kansas City. How do you propose to work together to show them that you are all essentially connected? And we'll go to Mr. Francis for the first answer on that.
Well, one of the things I do understand, I do live in a integrated environment to where it's not predominantly my own heritage. So I'm able to understand different walks of life, and I appreciate that. And especially coming from spending my time in prison, being able to correlate, and then also attract different friends that I now call family from different parts of Missouri. And so basically what I do is I take their causes, I take their issues, and just like what a friend of mine reminded me, you may have a large percentage of people, but you still have to represent that small 2%. So my thing is I carve out a niche and I always keep their interests.
Okay. Ms. Washington, answer to the same question. How would you propose to work with those that are in rural communities and let them know we all share the same situations regardless of where we live?
Growing up my entire life from August to June, I lived at 2713 Cleveland. 1 month out of every year and every month during the year, I spent my time in the smallest town in the state of Missouri that actually sits on the line of two counties. That's Blackburn, Missouri, that sits on the county line of Lafayette and Saline County. It's not Blackwater on I-70 that people try to correct me. It is Blackburn. I understand farmers. I understand the issues that small town people have. I understand rural America because I'm from rural America. And the questions I don't have, that's why I spent time in Southeast Missouri this year to be able to comprehend more of what their present issues are to fight for them.
Okay. We've got a question. Rich on line two, can you tell us what your question or comment is for our candidates?
Sure. I've got so many, but I'll just try to stick to one or two.
Can you give me just one?
Yeah, sure. It seems to me that the predominant issue for limiting crime in the city is reducing the number of guns in the city. How do you all think the legislature will react to any kind of proposal? Can you find a proposal that the legislature would approve of about guns?
Thank you for that, Rich, and we'll listen off air for an answer. So do you think that the Missouri legislature will approve some type of gun control? I know Missouri is, for those who don't know, may not know, Missouri is open carry state, which means you don't have to have a permit, as in they've changed the law. So, and Mayor James has suggested the stricter gun laws in Missouri. And do you as a candidate believe the stricter gun laws can get passed through the state legislature? We'll start, Ms. Washington.
No. And it's not because I didn't fight for it. We had approximately 14 bills filed this year to restrict gun use, gun and where you could take a gun. Right now, you can take it to church without notifying people. You can take it to the library. I filed a bill to restrict it from the library because I had a meeting with the library before I went to Jeff City. But the only thing that saved expanding gun laws this year in the state of Missouri is what happened in Florida. And so until we can educate all of the representatives throughout the entire state, it's going to be difficult for those of us from the urban areas to get our points across.
And we're giving our candidates now about 30 seconds to answer each question because we're winding up. We have about 10 minutes left, and there's a couple of questions we definitely get to. So, Mr. Francis, do you believe that we would be able to change some of the gun laws here in the state of Missouri?
Years ago, I was summoned up to Jeff City, and what was happening was people were putting targets on Democrats' doors. And so because of where I come from, I hang around a lot of gun nuts. And these people they are just infatuated with guns, with clips and everything. I come from this culture. My thing is we have to educate our carriers about this lifestyle.
Okay. It is October and we're not yet to the number of murders we had last year, but we're over 100. What ideas would you take to reduce crime and violence in the community? And we'll start, Mr. Francis. You have 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Well, it's been something that I've been screaming since I've been out of prison. Hey, the ones that's getting killed and murdered, the victims and perpetrators, for a large part, they pour out of the hip-hop community. It's not that the hip-hop community is responsible, but there is something going on there, and we need support from our leaders. Instead of being attacked by our community leaders, we need to be embraced by our community leaders, and then we can have that conversation.
Okay. Ms. Washington.
I'm going to keep trying to do what I do and go out into the community. As a criminal defense attorney, I represent young men who get charged with gun crimes all the time without a permit, without a reason to have them. I try to provide them a different way of life and to show, educate them on the different opportunities that exist out there so that you don't have to use a gun for crime. We need to make sure, as Mr. Francis said, we actually need to support them, but we need to respect young people and respect those, even the older people who are using guns for violent crimes, and explain to them why that is. And so if we need to show support, but we need to also educate them and make sure they're educated, stay in school, get a trade, or even if that trade is an arts trade, my daughter's an artist. So we need to embrace that community.
We have a housing crisis here in Kansas City, and recently the Kansas City City Council approved a price of over $1,000 a month as an affordable cost for housing in our city. In your opinion, what should be done to ensure that those who are low income and on fixed incomes are not priced out of the market when it comes to housing in Kansas City? Ms. Washington, first answer to that.
We don't have them that expensive in our district. And I'm sorry, we need to take a little more than 30 seconds on this one. If I'm a kid, if I'm a young person that's making 50 grand and I live downtown Kansas City, I can afford $1,000 a month because I don't have the other expenses that people have to get to work. I can walk or I can ride a bike. So that $50,000, that $1,000 a month doesn't seem as much because it's basically a week's pay. In our community, we need better affordable housing. And I fought for that by filing better laws for tenants. We need people to not be evicted so fast. And we need to hold landlords more accountable. Because once we do that, that will prevent as many evictions as we have had in Missouri. I think we have 37 a day in Jackson County alone. And that is absolutely atrocious. And I would venture to say at least 60 to 70% of those people are people of color. They're all poor people. We need to work to get wages increased, and we need to work to enforce to put some regulations on landlords to keep fair housing, affordable housing, as well as livable housing for people so they're not moving around. And by doing that, we also increase our education system because people are more stable and not moving around transient. And being more, they're not as transient as they are because they don't have a place to live.
Mr. Francis?
I see that. I have a difficult time with the voter apathy because so many people are homeless and they say, man, I'm homeless. I don't even care to vote. I need a place to stay right now tonight. How are you going to help me now? And so this is what my canvassing comes to. So I've been a landlord to where people have squatted on me. I've been a renter where I've been thrown out by landlords who didn't pay their mortgage or whatnot. So I've been on both ends of the spectrum. How do we fix it? We have rising homelessness, and it's also associated with the crime, and it's also associated with the blight. So when you have different programs like Community Action that's being cut of their funding, and people have a difficult time paying for their utilities, because the Federal Reserve, they study showed that if you're paying over 40% of your income on rent, then you're in the poorhouse. So I do a lot of studies. I study a lot of the Federal Reserve, a lot of their releases, and that's how I keep a track of a lot of the housing and the index price index market.
Okay. So, Mr. Francis, first question to you. We have a serious education situation in Kansas City. We have over 25 charter schools and more opening each year. Should charter schools be limited only to Kansas City and St. Louis, or should they be open statewide?
I believe charter schools, I'm a fan of Kansas City Public Schools, but I've done a lot of self education. So I do understand that homeschooling, I've had an auntie who's ushered her children through college prematurely, chemical engineers and all of that through homeschooling. So public schools, homeschools, charter schools, we're talking about education, period. So I do not want to do anything that will restrict an opportunity for any child to learn and grow. If there's something that's going to open up funding, that's going to open up possibilities, availabilities for learning centers and for learning applications, I'm all for that. And that's one thing I'm always going to stand behind.
Ms. Washington.
The question is, should charters be expanded outside of Kansas City and St. Louis, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. If you're going to make charters, which have not proven to be the most effective here in Kansas City or in St. Louis, there are some great charters. I want to say that. But there are some really, really bad charters, and there's no oversight for charters. The Missouri Department of Secondary and Elementary Education does not have any control over charters. So when a school is bad, they don't get bad media press like the Kansas City School District for being unaccredited, because they're not accredited in the first place. So if rural areas want to, maybe they need to see that so that they can stop voting for charter schools just in our communities that are somewhat detrimental to our students. Now, those charter schools that are great, that's wonderful, and let's keep them going. But for those that are closed, we need some better oversight as to getting our kids that are in our communities the best education they can get. So if rural communities need to see that, then go ahead and let them expand, and then maybe they'll see that this charter system, the way it's set up in Missouri, is not the best for any of our children.
Should the state allow charter schools that are operating below the local public school district to continue operation? The state has the power to close failing public schools, but failing charter schools continue to operate, such as the old Derek Thomas Academy. Then it closed and was unable to pay bills. So should charter schools that are below the local public school district be allowed to continue operation, Ms. Washington?
Absolutely not. Now, you can't give them 1 year and say, hey, you get to be open for 1 year and you got to get it all together. But after, you know, after, I'm not an educator. Well, I am, but teach community college. I think we have to have some boundaries there. And we need to give DESE the authority to establish some procedures, work with the Charter School Commission as to what that time frame is, because we can't continue to allow 10, 15 years of a charter school that is underperforming, and then leaving the state with that debt. Derek Thomas's debt didn't go to the individuals. That's debt that we as taxpayers have to absorb.
Okay. Mr. Francis?
Yes, I agree with a failing charter school. It shouldn't be placed, that financial burden shouldn't be placed in the laps of the community. That's one of the things, like when you have a charter school and then you have homeschooling and then you have these different educational opportunities. I do feel like they can be expanded, but like I say, the funding capacity for these things, the initiatives, nothing beats a bullet like a job. Nothing can redirect a child better than education. And him knowing himself and knowing what he really can do, or she, when you expose them to their own potential.
Okay. The Missouri Attorney General Josh Hawley and candidate for United States Senate signed onto a Texas lawsuit filed February 16, 2018, that will allow insurance companies not to cover those with pre-existing conditions, which could be diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. It also, the bill would charge higher premiums. This will impact anywhere between 1.1 million Missourians and 2.5 million Missourians. Are you in favor of this lawsuit, or should the state legislature step in to ensure the Missourians are protected?
We need to do better at stepping in to make sure they're protected. As someone who had a pre-existing injury on their own, I have my own business, and I insured myself, but I was told that they wouldn't cover it, so I had to go get a job, work my law firm in the day, work all the way through the night until 3 or 4 in the morning just so I can get a surgery that I needed. So I know firsthand why we need pre-existing injuries covered. We have elderly people with high blood pressure that leads to a lot of issues, kidney disease and diabetes, which are the three leading diseases, and heart disease. But those top three, those are the top, hypertension, blood pressure and diabetes are the highest things in our own community. They lead to a lot of diseases that would not be covered under this if this lawsuit were to win. We need to fight as a legislator, because it doesn't affect just urban, doesn't affect just rural. It ain't a black or white issue. It ain't a young or old. It is a people issue. And we need to remember that we, including Mr. Hawley, represent the people of Missouri and do what is best for the people of Missouri. And this is a horrible lawsuit.
Mr. Francis?
Yes. I believe groups of people are going to be affected by this. Those with hereditary, those with congenital, those with developed, and those who know that they have these pre-existing diseases. These are four groups of people. Now, hereditary, I shouldn't be penalized because I was born a certain way, because this is what was passed down. Congenital, that means it's not hereditary, but it's still at birth. And then something else may be something that's developed because you may be working in a plant or something and you may develop the illness. And so because of my line of work, I shouldn't be precluded from health care because of an occupation that I took up. And so, even with a lifestyle that a person has. So those are things, and like Mrs. Washington said, this is a people issue, and whenever we start putting dollars in front of the common sense of the health of the folk, of the people, then that's a major problem.
Okay, we're going to have to wrap up. So each candidate will have a one-minute closing statement. So, Mr. Francis, can you give your closing and say tell people why they should vote for you?
You should vote for me because one of the things I didn't touch on is the rising homicide, the continuous homicide rate that's averaging over 100. Now, and it's happening to a certain peer group. What I represent a voice for this dying generation, and I'm speaking to an aging population so we can bridge this gap. And the people, those who follow me and those who watch me, they are hanging their hat on the possibilities of me winning this election, and actually, because they want to know if the system actually accepts its own people.
Ms. Washington?
This system does accept its own people. I'm one of those people. I've proven that. I've lived in the inner city my entire life. I've had an opportunity to leave my entire life, as did my parents. I should go back because I've already been working. I continue to work. I worked for my community before I went. I've busted my butt while I've been there, and I'm a perfect voice to be able to talk to the other side, make them listen, and be able to work with them. I understand everything, and I should be able to go back. You should vote for somebody who's already proven themselves for a year and who has the right. I'm the right person for the right time to work with what we have to deal with in Jefferson City to continue to get something done for our district.
Thank you so much. We never end Cowtown Conversations without a community minute, but I would like to thank our guests for coming today. Missouri State Representative Brandon Ellington is having a job fair today at the Robert J. Mohart Center, 3200 Wayne, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. There will be over 20 employers on site looking to hire. The fair will have employers that will hire individuals who have a criminal record. The next election will be November the 6th. The deadline to register in Missouri has passed. The last day to register in Kansas is October 16th. Your voice is your vote. Let your voice be heard on November 6th. If you have or know any person who's not registered to vote in Kansas, have them contact them and have them register before the October 16th date.
Wanted to add that the Metropolitan Community College's Workforce Development and Business and Technology Center will be at Representative Ellington's Felon Job Fair today to also provide opportunities and information for workforce-friendly programs that felons can take advantage of to gain stronger skills.
Thank you. Join us next week. We'll talk about the constitutional amendments on the juvenile ballot. For Cowtown Conversations, I've been your host, Joseph Jackson. Stay safe, have a great day, and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.